Hello everyone, this is Mehul Desai and welcome to the second edition of the Tantra Podcast. Thank you all for joining from all around the world. We are extremely humbled by the reception we got to our inaugural episode. And as I had mentioned at the end of the first episode, here we are again, this time around to talk a little bit more about fintech. As we internally at Tantra started to bounce around what aspect of fintech we should cover, what markets we should cover, why are we where we are today in the world with fintech as an industry? What are the trends? What are the opportunities? How does all of this play around across different markets? And frankly, what are the implications of this evolution of fintech across other industries as well? The team at Tantra thought that before we jump into the series, we might want to set the stage, set the context, and essentially use that to kind of follow up with a series of conversations with friends and experts from around the world who have been living and working in these different aspects of fintech, just like myself, for the last almost three decades, who have been deep within different geographies and different markets, so who bring a very in-depth market perspective, and then extend that framework, so to say, out to other industries as well. And so here we are today. Today's episode is largely to set the stage for a series of conversations that will follow over the next many months as we literally dissect fintech, its origins, as we've experienced it, kind of where we are today and where we see it going. And then as we take this across different markets to get that in-depth market experience or expertise. Today's conversation is really about setting the stage for that series. And so with that said, I want to introduce a dear colleague of mine from Tantra, Harsh, who has been working tirelessly behind the scenes to get our entire podcast series organized, and over and above that, works with the entire team at Tantra, the larger ecosystem of Tantra, our experts, our mentors, to launch, literally every week, the blogs, the white papers, and so on and so forth. So Harsh, welcome to Tantra's podcast, something that you have been working tirelessly behind the scenes to pull together. It kind of feels odd welcoming you to this, but Harsh, welcome.
Thank you so much, Mehul. I am glad to be a part of this podcast, and thank you so much for introducing me in such a grand manner, but I am assuming that you know what kind of work we are doing here at Tantra. But before I think we jump into understanding and what you said about fintech, I am pretty sure that a large number of audience is very curious to know about how it all began for you. So can you like throw a little bit of light on your educational background, upbringing, and how you started?
Sure, Harsh. I'm of Indian origin. I think while you know this very well, maybe for the sake of our audience, I was actually born in Chicago. My parents, like many Indian professionals, traveled to the U.S. in the early 60s. Both my father and mother got their PhD here. As a matter of fact, my father was defending his PhD, working on his postdoc in Evanston, which is just north of downtown Chicago. And so that's how I was born there. But unlike a lot of the Indians who came to the U.S. in the 60s, my parents were probably the select few who from the very beginning wanted to always go back to India and actually spend their life in social service. And so that's eventually what they did. So they lived here in the U.S. for about 10, 15 years and then went back to a rural part of Gujarat where they literally spent their entire life building a series of different social services. Started with healthcare, moved into vocational education, eventually into women's empowerment, and so on and so forth. And frankly, in my case, when we moved back to India, I was very young. I ended up going to school in Baroda in Gujarat. I ended up getting my undergraduate degree in telecommunication engineering in Bangalore. But more than that, the environment that I grew up in was always one where we paid the most important stress to values, saying that, you know, these are the values which guide us, these are the values which will mold us, and it's important to stay true to those values. And in my case, that those values were always centered around truth. They were always centered around finding ways to give back. They were always centered around using kind of everything that we do in our lives, you know, internal, external, to eventually find a way to grow and evolve, you know, the inner self, right? And so that's the environment that I really grew up in. And in many ways, that's what really, you know, formed everything that I've done, consciously or subconsciously. After getting an undergraduate degree in telecommunication, I moved back to the U.S. And immediately started working in kind of what in today's day and age you would call a tech incubator, where we took ideas, we filed patents, we created prototypes with the eventual goal of spinning off business units. Along with that, I also started working on a master's, initially in engineering and then in business. And, you know, over a span of a few years, got the advantage of both. I got to work on lots of different and exciting areas. You know, I got to, ended up with a master's degree. It was around the same time that I also got introduced and met my future wife. And so, you know, those foundational years in my case truly have been just that, very foundational.
All right. So you have done, I think, a lot of exciting things in your college. As you said, you were a part of very exciting projects and you met your wife. And you said that you operate on a set of values. So how did that translate in your professional foundation when you began your career?
Great question. So look, I mean, as much as I've been blessed with you know, these values, and, you know, like I said, my parents themselves had done such exemplary things. So I really did not have a dearth of inspiration, not to use that term lightly. I also am blessed and got a tremendous mentor as I started my professional journey. And so our audience in India will recognize him right away. And, you know, for those of our global audience that have worked in the area of telecommunication and ICT will also recognize him. I got an opportunity to work very closely with Sam Petroda. Sam and my parents are very close personal friends. So I actually knew Sam personally from literally the day I was born, Sam and Anu, his wife. But as I completed my undergrad and I came back to the US and I started working, for the first time in my life, I had the privilege and honor of working for Sam. And really, my professional foundation was formed through that interaction, through that mentorship, really through kind of that labor of love, right? And I'm sure there are lots of folks who have worked with Sam over the years who can relate to this. But in that sense, Sam gives, you know, unconditionally and tirelessly. And I was a direct beneficiary of it. It was literally a blessing. So for me personally, there are, you know, while my parents kind of gave me the values and helped create that part of my foundation, my professional foundation was built entirely by learning and working with and eventually alongside Sam over a span of literally two decades. And so when I first started working, as I mentioned earlier, you know, it was literally an incubator. We started with ideas. We filed patents. You know, that's when I first learned, you know, what patents were, how to file patents, how to write engineering notes, the entire process. In some cases, we actually took it a little further towards building, you know, prototypes, and eventually got to also sit alongside building some business units. And also, it was at this time that not only did I kind of get the tactical skills around technology and using technology towards building products and solving for larger problems, but I also got to learn something very important, which was that, you know, when you try out different things, especially things which have never been done before, failure is part and parcel of that process. Some things work and a lot of things just do not. And as long as you're not making the same mistake again, you know, all failures are perfectly fine. You know, embrace failure as long as you're not making the same mistake again. And so that's kind of how my professional foundation got set up. You know, really, the core values started to translate into kind of what I call focusing on creativity as opposed to consumption. You know, given that I was already given a strong kind of spiritual foundation, I started to view creativity to be another tactical tool in that direction, saying that anytime you're creating something, you know, it is a spiritual journey, as opposed to consuming. Now, it goes without saying, we all consume as much and we have to. Okay, but bit by bit, if you start saying that, look, you know, I want to be involved in creating something, I think it just sets you on a very different personal journey. Clearly, intellectual property, the importance of intellectual property, how to build it, nurture it, respect it, protect it, and eventually monetize it, you know, all of that became a big part of my professional foundation. And then bit by bit, you know, this led to different ideas. It led to kind of the classical, you know, how do you incubate an idea? How do you accelerate an idea? And some of these, you know, went further along. So in my case, you know, one of the ideas that came directly out of this incubator was the concept of digitizing leather wallets. That's what kind of led to the start of CSAM, a company that Sam and I founded together, you know, out of Chicago in the 90s. And over a span of two decades, with a lot of friends and help along the way, we eventually built it into a global company where we were licensing technology to all large infrastructure providers who wanted to essentially deploy secure transactions. A lot of those applications were in the financial space. A lot of those applications were in the retail space, but we also got to dabble on the healthcare side. We also got to dabble a little bit on the government services side. And in many ways, those 20 years kind of really set the stage for everything else that I've done in the following 10. And, you know, we got to build a great company. We started a company out of Chicago in 98. We got to sell that to MasterCard in 2014. And, you know, really that became a big part of my personal fintech, both upbringing, you know, understanding, and eventually, you know, all the other things that I know you want to talk about as part of this fintech series. Since then, since 2014, I kind of continued along that path. You know, what I realized is that I really enjoy building things. I love the build process, kind of what I call the 0 to 10. I don't quite really enjoy running things once they are built. And so that's what I've been doing. Some of these have been my own ideas that I've built out. Some of these are ideas that friends of mine have had, and you know, we've collaborated to build those out. And I've kind of ended up with about 12 to 15, you know, companies within which it's been a mixed bag. You know, some have worked, a lot haven't. I've had what the industry calls kind of three successful exits. I've actually shut down a couple of companies from which I frankly learned a lot. And there are a few more that I'm building in stealth. Probably the only exception to this in the last few years was this one opportunity where I was asked to come in and work with a large financial services group to kind of lay out their fintech narrative. That led to helping them go public on the London Stock Exchange, which in itself was very educational, and I enjoyed that part of the process immensely. But outside of that one experience, frankly, everything else that I've done, going all the way back to CSAM, you know, to Peace and several other companies now, is really kind of that 0 to 10, or what I call the build process. That's the part which really excites me personally. And so that's kind of my professional foundation. The last 30 years have really kind of helped me, once again, you know, start with those values, but find a way to tactically express them in a way that I enjoy. And it has now led me to Tantra. And, you know, obviously you know about Tantra, but for the sake of our audience, you know, at Tantra, it's really a culmination of my 30 years of learning from all kinds of people, from all kinds of markets, from all kinds of industries around the world, saying that how can we embrace friction and how do we turn that into innovation, and how do we then find a way to do innovation in a sustainable way? And, you know, obviously at Tantra, we now have five core components of that. We have the engineering services, we have ventures, we have Gurukul, which is our own academy, which is about to be announced shortly. We have our own incubator at Tantra. And, you know, we have started to build our for-purpose enterprise platform. And really, Tantra is that sandbox. It's kind of my personal sandbox, which along with other people, colleagues, friends like myself, I want to use to take ideas and turn them into sustainable innovation.
Right. And I think a lot of Tantra's values are reflected from what you have experienced and learned over the past 3 decades in fintech, which, you know, makes me curious about understanding this, that you have seen fintech from its beginning and you are still seeing how it is going in the future. So can you like tell us about how the advent and evolution of fintech is, you know, going through, and how would you describe it?
I kind of have to go back to the early days of my own professional journey. And as I described earlier, you know, my background is in telecommunication. I trained as a telecommunication engineer. In the early 90s, we started to think through kind of how, you know, what would happen if you digitized the leather wallet, right? So what many people, you know, may or may not be aware of, Sam, amongst many things that he's done in the telecommunication space, was also the inventor of the digital diary, the diary in which you stored names, addresses, you know, appointments, things of that sort. And he had a patent for which actually used to collect royalty from a lot of companies which made that diary popular back in the 70s and 80s. And in some ways, as I started to work for Sam in the early 90s, a follow-on question that he posed to all of us was, you know, what happens when you digitize a leather wallet? We digitize the paper diary. Okay, let's see what happens when you digitize the leather wallet. Everything, the leather jacket, the plastic cards which sit in it, the paper receipts which come out of it. Now, you're kind of young, Harsh, okay, but some folks in our audience can relate to the world back in the 90s, okay, where, you know, every time you swiped a piece of plastic, whether it was a credit card at a bank or at a merchant terminal, or as you kind of, you know, started to get more and more plastic, a loyalty card, a frequent flyer card, eventually driver's license, whatever it turned out to be, every time you swiped a card, okay, you ended up with paper receipts, and then, you know, you signed it, you kept one, you gave one to the merchant sent a third one to a processor, and so on and so forth. So in the early 90s, as we started to kind of approach this, in my opinion, very naively as telecommunication technical folks, not as bankers, not as merchants, not as finance domain experts, we were very naive. We said that, look, let's digitize all of this and let's see what happens. And in many ways, we started to do fintech, right? I mean, back then, we didn't call it fintech, but we were using technology to solve for financial challenges. It started with retail, then extended out into other services, you know, eventually came back to the financial kind of value chain and ecosystem. And frankly, in a very painful way, we got to kind of learn how the entire financial retail value chain operated. And, you know, kind of to our collective credit, I should say, with a lot of luck and a lot of kind of well-wishers along the way, we found a way to kind of stay true to our vision. And we ended up kind of surviving literally over 20 years as we took that simple idea and turned it into a platform, you know, and eventually deployed it around the world across every major market, every major industry, work with all the large banks, the networks, the carriers, the merchants, you know, other service providers. And bit by bit, we kind of started to create what I now call the plumbing of secure transactions. Yes, a big part of that plumbing eventually got deployed, picked up, and obviously as MasterCard acquired that company, became kind of relevant in the fintech space. So, you know, we work with banks for financial services, everything from the early days of mobile banking. We also work with merchants for all kinds of things, from ticketing to coupons to promotions, the kind of early days of retail and seamless commerce. And so for us, that plumbing started to manifest itself in lots of different ways. But at heart, if you ask me what we were building the plumbing for all kinds of secure transactions, which is why very quickly we could take all of our financial and retail experiences and bring it to the healthcare industry. And we actually deployed the world's first mobile portable health record. We could take all of our experience from the healthcare and the fintech industry, and we found a way to actually solve for challenges for distribution of large social programs. And essentially that plumbing, which applies for all secure transactions, started to find its way, started to manifest itself in the fintech space. So kind of coming back to your question, for me personally, this started with digitizing leather wallets, kind of finding a way to build a technology, a product, and license mobile wallets, then move into kind of mobile commerce, which was all the virtual mobile transactions, find a way to then further evolve it into the real world or the mobile payment side of things, and eventually branch out beyond just financial and retail applications into healthcare, into government services, a little bit of education, and so on and so forth. And so when you ask me about the advent of fintech, for me, the advent started with just creating this plumbing for secure transactions, on top of which we directly and then lots of other companies like ourselves eventually found ways to launch a series of applications. So what the industry today kind of relates to, calls out as fintech, for us really started with just applying technology to solve for friction, initially in the finance space, then in retail, then in healthcare, then in government, then in education. And along the way, obviously, the term fintech came in, a whole industry got defined around it. And, you know, clearly today we are at a point where while a lot of that plumbing is in place, clearly there are now exciting things happening within the applications related to fintech and kind of the next phase or the evolution of fintech. And so now to come to the second part of your question, right, that, okay, if we all agree that a good part of that plumbing is in place, where are we today? And so a term which, an expression which finds itself, you know, in the popular lexicon today is clearly DeFi, saying that, you know, how does finance get decentralized? Obviously, a lot of this fascination started with coins, virtual currencies. Okay, but now clearly there is a large space which has evolved around that aspect of fintech, saying that how can you, in an efficient way, in a reliable way, in a responsible way, decentralize finance? And, you know, kind of what does that mean to us today and where do we go from here? Personally, if you ask me, the emphasis that I would put, the focus that I would like to bring in is not just on decentralizing finance, but on what I call democratizing finance. Saying that how can we truly democratize finance? Clearly, this plumbing is in place and it's doing a lot of interesting things, right? So at a bare minimum, most people, most of our audience around the world can relate to using your iPhone to make payments or your Android phone to make payments, you know, or, you know, paying for coffee at a Starbucks or what have you, right? Those are now kind of very mass market, ubiquitous applications. But if you go one step beyond that, there is clearly an interesting interesting movement in place. One, to use what we call stable coins to power the movement of money in near real time all around the world at volume and velocity, whereby it can really kind of start replacing the legacy plumbing with the new plumbing. So that's one big part of the fintech kind of state of where things are today. Another big part of the fintech kind of movement is on what I call, or rather what the industry calls, sovereign CBDC or central bank digital currency, where your central bank will issue your currency in bits and bytes alongside papers and bills and coins and notes. And when you kind of take the plumbing, let's say built over the last 20 to 30 years, and you overlay on top of that this movement of money, whether it's on the coin side, the stable coin side, or on the CBDC side, you kind of find yourself at the point where I believe we now have evolved the plumbing to help democratize finance. And as we do that, clearly the opportunities in front of us, over and above the applications, are now going to be to extend out that evolution even more, right? And so in many ways, when you kind of, you know, when you talk about the plumbing, for me, the plumbing, yes, the plumbing is very much in place. The advent of fintech for me personally started with mobile wallets and commerce and payment and extending it out to secure transactions. Where we are today, we clearly have a lot of exciting things happening in the movement of money, whether it's in country or across borders, across countries, at a volume and velocity whereby we can truly start thinking and doing things which have never been done before. But where does all of this come together? And what does this mean for all of us as we move into the next 10 to 20 years of fintech? That is the exciting part of this evolution.
Right. I think that makes sense. And we are very curious about something because, as you mentioned, that you guys started with mobile wallets and payments. And our team did a little bit of research, as we usually do at Tantra. And we have found out that you have also written a book about this, and which makes us curious that you and Sam Pitroda were one of the very few people who anticipated that mobile money and mobile finance is going to be a big thing in the future, right? But as we are seeing today, mobile payments are taking a secondary stage, and as you said, DeFi, CBDC are becoming the primary drivers of fintech. So I want to ask, like, how is it possible that there is an innovation, let's say if it is CBDC, how can we turn it into a sustainable innovation so that, you know, it can work through in the long run in the financial industry?
I cannot profess to have the silver bullet or the single answer for your question, Harsh. Okay, but what I can tell you, based on my experience, and, you know, we touched upon this, by the way, in our first inaugural episode with Bruce, when we talked about innovation and, you know, how can we kind of do it in a more efficient way and so on. And so in my experience, with lots of well kind of meaning, you know, good intentions, people around the world have invariably treated innovation as an exercise where you try a bunch of things out and then see kind of what works or what sticks, as I like to call it, and then double down on that, right? And obviously, there's nothing wrong with it. We all do it consciously, subconsciously, part of a framework, methodology, or otherwise. But there is clearly a science part of this, which we can learn from. We can bring it into our practice. We can turn it into a broader methodology and essentially kind of use that science, use that framework to do what we now refer to at Tantra as sustainable innovation, right? And what we mean by sustainable is literally just that, okay? So, I mean, obviously, sustainability today is an industry in itself, and which we are, you know, very conscious of, very sensitive to, and we would love to find ways to be a part of that and participate, especially when it comes to innovation for sustainability at large. But for us, sustainable innovation takes on a broader context, a broader calling, if I may, which is to say that can we keep looking for ways whereby we can make innovation more efficient, where we can ensure that innovation becomes sustainable? So that's kind of Tantra's broader charter. And obviously at Tantra, we want to focus on five key sectors and five key domains, fintech being one of them, health tech, IoT, supply chain, and new economy, essentially rounding those off. But within fintech, and specifically to CBDC, you know, again, the view that we have, okay, the view that I have, and obviously we collectively bring it forth at Tantra, is to once again apply those same frameworks, apply those same kind of processes, apply that same science that we are learning from and leveraging for innovation at large, specifically to the area of fintech. And so today, if you talk about the movement of money, you know, clearly there are these two trends which are very well underway. As in, I don't think there are people in the fintech space who are debating whether these trends are real or not. Yes, it still remains to be seen how these trends will be scaled up and how they will become sustainable. There are lots of different ideas around that, but I don't think anyone will question these two trends. And those two trends clearly are, as I mentioned earlier, one kind of in the stable coin space and the other in the sovereign CBDC space. These collectively are clearly going to become the new plumbing for the movement of money. How do we apply sustainable innovation to these? I would say exactly the same way that we have learned in terms of how we apply sustainable innovation to everything else. Saying you have to start with framing, okay, then reframing, then again bringing it into the iterative process, you know, trying it out, see what works, see what doesn't work, embracing that failure alongside doubling down on that success, making sure you don't repeat those same mistakes again, and then putting it back out into the field, right? And every time we do this in a user-centric way, and as a matter of fact, wherever possible, as Bruce coined it, in a life-centric way, saying that this is no longer done in a provider-centric way, you have to do it in a user life-centric way. And as you go through this process, I am confident that we will, throughout the kind of Tantra ecosystem and several other ecosystems like ours around the world, find ways to make, whether it's stablecoin, CBDC, largely the movement of money, more and more sustainable.
I think it makes total sense, Mehul, and it would be great to see what the future holds for the fintech industry. But my next question is really personal, because everybody at Tantra, I am sure, is curious to know about this, and our audience member will understand in a minute why I am saying everybody at Tantra. So Mehul, you generally use this phrase called the holy grail of fintech. Can you explain to us a little bit about what is the holy grail of fintech?
Sure, Harsh. And you're right, I probably do use that phrase a lot. So look, let me kind of break it up for the benefit of everyone at Tantra, maybe there are lots of folks in our audience as well that this may be helpful too, right? So obviously the expression holy grail comes from, you know, pursuing something which is elusive. You know, anytime you are going after something which in a way you kind of know is unachievable, but still it's important to go after that for all the right reasons, you kind of use this expression, okay? And hence kind of the pursuit of something elusive, okay, is probably the textbook definition of holy grail. I assume so. I haven't looked it up, but I think that's kind of broadly put, you know, how the definition would sound. In my case, you know, and from a fintech perspective, as kind of a fin technocrat, right? As a technocrat working in the fintech space for now almost 30 years, you know, we talked about the advent and the evolution. We talked about kind of what was my foundation, how that led to, you know, working with lots of other people around the world to build the plumbing, so to say, of secure transactions. You know, kind of we talked about my perception of kind of where the state of the fintech industry is today. We talked about that. And so in some ways, when I think about, let's say, the next 20 years of my life, you know, if I survive that long, you know, where would fintech be? Kind of what would I set my sight on, right? What is it that's going to drive me as a fintechnocrat for the next 20 years, specifically when it comes to the area of fintech? You know, I kind of use a different expression, what I call the normalization of the cost of accessing capital. Okay, it's a mouthful, and I'll kind of break it down in a minute. But for me, the simple answer to what do I think personally, based on my last 30 years of working in this space around the world, what do I think the next, let's say, 30 years hold for us? What is that elusive kind of goal or objective that should guide us, that should drive us? What is the holy grail of fintech for me? It is essentially finding that normalization of the cost of accessing capital. Now, today, as we know very well, there is lots of capital out there, but different people within a particular market, depending on who you are, your background, what you do, how you do it, your history, all the science, the right reasons, the wrong reasons, all of that collectively kind of set up the access to capital differently. Not everyone has the same access to capital. Not everyone pays the same cost for capital. Now, as a fintechnocrat, as a fintech professional, you know, we're constantly using technology to solve for friction in the financial space, right? Hence the term fintech. And, you know, while it started with, okay, let's digitize, you know, leather wallets and let's see kind of how the plumbing grows. And then at some point it turned into, okay, we've got all this great plumbing in place to move money around. Can we use it for healthcare and everything else? You know, if you really ask me at the end of the day, within the fintech space, if we can find ways whereby we can normalize the cost of accessing capital, saying that regardless of who you are, where you are, what part of the world you are in, how you're operating, clearly based on a set of metrics, because this is all about responsible, you know, access. Clearly, you know, if you're a bad player, a negative player, a player who's trying to abuse the system needs to find a way to obviously isolate you and treat you differently. That goes without saying. But as far as everyone else is concerned, if there is a way for us to find a way to normalize the cost of accessing capital, I think tremendous societal good will come from that, right? If you just think about it, okay, the people who have the most dire need of capital invariably are the ones who end up paying the maximum cost for accessing it. I have nothing against the people who, you know, who can afford it and are paying for it, but I absolutely am pained by the fact that there are lots of people out there in billions who are deserving. Okay, who finally now with all this plumbing and technology and, you know, all of the societal progress we've made in the last, you know, geez, decades, not just my 30 years, but even beyond that, have finally found ways to access capital. But yet when it comes to the cost that they have to pay to access the capital, in spite of being responsible players in the system, being responsible citizens, okay, wherever they are, they invariably end up paying the highest cost. And as fintechnocrats, as fintech professionals, as fintech aficionados around the world, if we can collectively now harness all of our learnings, take all of this from plumbing, take kind of the current era of democratizing finance that we're living in, with stable coins and everything else we've talked about, if we can find a way to normalize that cost of accessing capital for these positive, responsible players in the system, I believe we will bring around tremendous societal good, which will have implications way beyond the fintech industry. And so coming back to your question, okay, you know, what do I mean by the holy grail of fintech? That is what I mean by the holy grail of fintech. Okay, if we can find a way to normalize the cost of accessing capital, you know, that is a worthy goal. Is that goal achievable? I believe it is. Is it going to be easy? I am confident it will not be. Will it take lots of different people, lots of different experiments, trials, errors, start, stops? Absolutely. But is there a more worthier goal worth pursuing? I personally do not believe so. And so, frankly, that is the holy grail of fintech. Now, as part of this fintech series that we want to now launch, you know, at Tantra, the podcast series, as I said at the beginning of this particular session, this conversation, you know, I want to now kind of have conversations with friends and colleagues that I have been collaborating with, working with over the last 20, almost 30 years, many of whom are deeply entrenched in the fintech space, and I want to bring them in, and I want to have a series of conversations in terms of how they view the holy grail of fintech. The view that I have, you know, to answer your question, is one view. I want to understand in their opinion what is the holy grail of fintech, and from their perspective, the market they sit in, the aspect of fintech they have embraced, and the lives that they have led and continue to live, how they view that culminating towards kind of their holy grail. That is going to be essentially the objective of our FinTech podcast series. I personally am excited about that. I think as I engage with some of these folks who I've known for a very long time and with whom I've built a lot of interesting things, some of whom I've not, you know, known for a very long time or that long a time, I'm excited by kind of how they view this and how they kind of see the evolution of FinTech over the next 20, 30 years. But so coming back to your question, I hope you have the answer. Maybe there are parts of this which may not just make sense right off the bat. But as we have this series, as we have a series of these conversations, I believe bit by bit we will start kind of breaking down, you know, where we are today and where we are headed over the next couple of decades, specifically in context of the evolution of FinTech, specifically in terms of kind of what we mean by the holy grail of FinTech.
Right. And as you rightly said, there are a lot of people who are working towards achieving this goal. And definitely before closing this podcast episode, I would like you to briefly tell us about how at Tantra we are utilizing this holy grail of FinTech along with innovation to work towards the goal of societal progress. If you could just tell us a little bit about it.
As I mentioned earlier, Tantra is very much that culmination of my personal journey. About 2 years ago, as Shardul and I, again, a dear friend and a colleague with whom, you know, I've had the opportunity to work for many years now, as we started to frame Tantra, it became clear to us that we needed five different blocks at Tantra. I laid these out. I kind of rattled them out earlier, but we have engineering services where we're further along. We have ventures where we've already started to invest in ideas that we think are exciting. We are getting ready to announce Gurukul, which is our academy, where we want to build people for Tantra, Tantra's ecosystem, and the industry at large. And then we will quickly follow through kind of the incubator as well as our enterprise platform. And so at Tantra, we clearly have this broad ecosystem laid out. Within that, we also want to go deep into five domains. FinTech, and I'll talk more about FinTech in a second. Alongside that, health tech, we have some great mentors who are already guiding us and will guide the Tantra ecosystem at large in the health tech space. The same for IoT, the same for supply chain, and then finally, kind of what I call the catch-all, the new economy domain. And so, you know, along with that kind of broad five foundational component Tantra ecosystem, we also wanted to bring the depth within these different domains. And I'm very happy to say that I think we are well along the way of building the larger Tantra ecosystem just to do all of that. Now, within FinTech, we have introduced a FinTech methodology at Tantra. The term or the expression that I had coined a few years ago was kind of designing for cashless, saying that, you know, as the world moves towards cashless, first off, cashless means different things to different people. And then two, as the world is moving towards cashless within FinTech, you know, how do we all get ready for that? If I'm a small company in the healthcare space, what does cashless mean to me? If I'm a large company in the retail space, what does cashless mean to me? And so we laid out an interesting methodology, and we have kind of embraced that methodology, what I call at that time design for cashless, as part of what we want to now offer up at Tantra to all of Tantra's kind of ecosystem participants, saying that if you are gearing up for cashless or you already are in the cashless economy, how can we help you to kind of further from where you are today? And so the design for cashless methodology is one of the very tactical methodologies that we bring to bear within the Tantra ecosystem, whether it's on the engineering side, whether it's on the venture side, whether it's on the academy or the incubator and so on. But that also then sets the stage for our target participant. Okay, again, whether you're a company engaging on the engineering side or you're a company which is engaged with our venture group from an investment standpoint, it sets the stage for you to participate and maybe even mold and drive a lot of these movements in context of the evolution of fintech at large, right? Once again, that holy grail. And so that's kind of what we are doing within fintech at Converge.
That is great. I mean, design for cashless and all the concepts that you mentioned definitely bring about a barrage of questions in my mind. But I understand that we have kind of a time limitation, and I would really like to do this again with you. So I think I will stop at this question. Thank you so much, Mehul, for, you know, enlightening us with how it all began for you and with the insights that you have gathered over the years in the fintech industry. I think you can take it over from here. Thank you so much.
On the contrary, thank you, Harsh. And I hope this kind of helps our audience essentially gear up for the fintech series that we are now going to start bringing to them over the next several months. We've already got kind of commitments from some very exciting guests who are going to join this conversation. I respect them immensely, and I believe they have done a lot. They have accomplished a lot, and they are willing to share openly with the world. Hence, they have agreed to participate in these conversations with us. And personally, I feel that our audience will benefit immensely just from listening to kind of their perspective. Again, the purpose of these conversations is to just put a perspective in front of our audience. In no way is it meant to tell you what to do, guide you how to go about doing it. It's just to bring another interesting perspective alongside everything else that you are exposed to out there that you're involved in doing. So with that, Harsh, I want to end by once again thanking our audience. We truly appreciate your giving us your time. We truly appreciate your kind of bringing us into your life in a small way. And we would love to find ways to stay connected with you. We would love to find ways to actively collaborate with you. Please reach out to any and all of us at Tantra, and we would love to kind of work with you in whatever way makes sense. Thank you once again. As I like to end by saying, have fun, be good, and be safe.